Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Side of Channel Current, Eastern North Side of the 12th Hour, Little Girl, Texas. Today is July 30, 2016, or it is April 17, 2020. We will start our second service on the Sabbath day with a song entitled, I'll Go You Where You Want Me to Go. It may not be on the mountains high, nor over the stormy sea. It may not be at the battle's front, my love have needed me. And if there's still small voice he called, prepares I do not know. All I said to you with my hand in mine, I'll go where you want me to go. I'll go where you want me to go, dear y'all, or a mountain or plain or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear y'all. I'll be what you want me to be. For a house today, dear love, in rest, this yacht will have me stay. There may be now in the past of sin, some wanderer whom I should see. For say, if thou wilt be my guide, the dark and rugged of way, a voice shall echo the message's scream. I'll say what you want me to say. I'll go where you want me to go, dear y'all, or a mountain or plain or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear y'all. I'll be what you want me to be. There's surely somewhere a lowly place, in earth's harvest fields are so wide, where I may labor to last short day, for yacht will have crucified. Oh, trust in my all unto thy care, I know thou lovest me. I will with the heart sincere, I'll be what you want me to be. I'll go where you want me to go, dear y'all, or a mountain or plain or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear y'all. I'll be what you want me to be.
Everlasting Kingdom, Part 9. This text is taken from Brother W. Johnson's Tract of the Kingdom, Jubilee 1998. We're just going to go ahead and get right on into it. I'm going to read one scripture here in Genesis chapter 3, verse 8. Let's just turn to the whole chapter and read the whole chapter in Genesis chapter 3. It says, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field, which the Yahweh Elohim had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath Yahweh said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. Okay, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die. And notice he put the word in there, surely. He could have said, I don't know, you may not have to die. Or he could have said, you shall not die. But he said, you shall not surely die. In other words, he put emphasis on it. For Elohim doth know. Now he knows that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened. And you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. Okay, now, Adam and Eve already knew what was good. They already knew what was good. That's the only side that they were acquainted with, the side of good. Because they were created perfect, and they had everything that they needed. Now, he put them in charge of this whole planet. And so they didn't have any need to even think about. Well, they didn't even know what evil was until that serpent come along and put that into her mind. And he says, and when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant unto the eyes, and the tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave out also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were open, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of the Yahweh walking in the garden. Okay, now, what does it mean? And they heard the voice of Yahweh walking in the garden. Okay, you know who that voice was? That voice was his son, Yahshua. And they heard the voice of the Yahweh Elohim walking. You know, a voice just don't go walking. A person goes walking. And they said it was a voice of the Yahweh. It didn't say the voice of Yahweh. It says the voice of the Yahweh. And it's got it written right there just like that. So that voice of the Yahweh was his son Yahshua, his right arm, walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Yahweh Elohim amongst the trees of the garden. Now, this voice of Yahweh walking in the garden, and on the other hand, you could also interpret that this way. And they heard the voice of the Yahweh, Elohim. It says, walking in the garden in the cool of the day. Now, this is improper grammar for English. For English, you know, this is improper. You know, voices don't go walking around. But people do. So let's look at it. And they heard the voice of Yahweh, Elohim, as he is walking in the garden. Okay, now that makes sense. That's uniformity. And they heard the voice of Yahweh Elohim as he is walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Yahweh Elohim. Now this is uniformity. Yahweh the Father. As he was, because he got all capital letters here for Lord, so we assume that the translators are believing that this is the Father. So the Father is walking amongst the trees of the garden. And the Yahweh Elohim called unto Adam and said unto him, where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden. Okay, there it is right there. Knowing that Yahweh is a man, just like Adam and Eve are, and they had already met him before, when he created them, he met them in the person. So they knew who he was, and they recognized his voice. Because they knew him. They knew him by voice, they knew him by sight. And so Adam says, and he said, I heard thy voice in the garden. And I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. And he said, who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree, whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat? And the man said, the woman whom thou gavest unto to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. And the Yahweh Elohim said unto the woman, what is this that thou hast done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me, and I did eat. Oh, well, she can speak pretty good English here. If they could take the Paleo Hebrew word and translate it into the word beguiled. And the Yahweh Elohim said unto the serpent, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle. So all of your living animals that walked and crawled upon the earth and flew upon the earth, upon the ground, not flew, but the serpents had wings. And he said, you're cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And I'll put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. He shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception, and sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be unto thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. Okay, now. See, now here Yahweh, he's a very jealous Yahweh. He created Adam. And Adam trusted his voice and knew his voice and trusted him. And he says, my sheep know my voice, and another they'll not follow. Now look at this. Now watch this. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. He said, now you have hearkened unto another voice besides my voice. And she hearkened unto another voice, the voice of the serpent. Okay. So this is what got them all in trouble. Instead of trusting in that one voice that they were familiar with, the one and only voice that they could trust, they trusted in a voice that they didn't even know. Now this is something else. They didn't know Lucifer. They'd never met him before. First time they had any contact with him was at that tree where he was camouflaged in the form of a serpent. And now here comes this voice speaking to Eve, and she's bemused by it. Well, she's very amused by it. And she can't imagine that serpent talking to her, having so much wisdom and knowledge. And so that really thrilled her. She said, well, what he's saying must be true, because that's pretty awesome for a serpent to speak in my language that I understand. So, wow. So if the serpent spoke to Eve in her language, that means that the language that Yahweh created in heaven for his son Yahshua, which came to this earth as a Hebrew Israelite, a Paleo-Hebrew, then they had to be Paleo-Hebrew in heaven. And the angels, and all the angels in heaven spoke Paleo-Hebrew. For Yahshua came to this earth with his name Yahshua, and that's taken from the Paleo-Hebrew. That's where it's pronounced. And Yahweh, his name is the Paleo-Hebrew, so Yahweh started out as a Paleo-Hebrew in heaven, beginning. And he created his son, and then he created Lucifer, and then all the angels, all these are Paleo-Hebrew people. Paleo seems to mean original. Another word for Paleo means original. period. So that would be the original language, the Paleo, original, beginning, or origin. The origin of all beginnings has the name Paleo. And then the enemy said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, not only because you had hearkened unto your wife, and also have eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. So what have we got? Two acts of transgression from Adam and Eve. And in one day, in the first day that they fell, they both committed two acts of transgression. Eve, by disobeying Yahweh and venturing away from her husband's side, and then listening to that strange voice that she wasn't even acquainted with, didn't have a clue who he was, and listening to it, and then believing it. Not only listening to it, but believing it. Now, there's three acts of transgression right there. Straying from her husband's side, disobeying that order. Okay, and number two, going to see the tree that she was told to stay away from. That's number two transgression. And then hearkening unto that voice of that serpent, that's number three transgression. And number four transgression of believing it. And the number five transgression was putting forth her hand and taking of it and eating it. Five transgressions right there in a row. And Adam repeated those transgressions. He repeated all five of them himself. Now, so, what are we looking at here? So, do you understand when Yahweh gives his servant a command, do something, he don't intend for that servant, Brother Johnson, he gave him a command. And Brother Johnson published it. He said, Yahweh told me to teach my people my government, 1969, at the Passover. He said, teach my people the government of Yahweh. And he said, 28 years later, he said, and I've been teaching it ever since. Okay? Well, he says he was, but he had been hearkening unto the voice of his wife all those years. So, whose government was he teaching? The government of Yahweh or the government of his wife? Well, you see, there's your transgression. Listening to another voice. Okay, and so, no doubt we could probably name all the transgressions of that angel of the seventh candlestick, and we could probably get at least five major transgressions right off that he performed. Whenever he says, I'll restore all these statutes and judgments, and then later on rescind them, that's a transgression. All of those are transgressions. All right. Yahweh says in Genesis 3:17, and unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Well, you know what? Why did Yahweh say, cursed be the ground for thy sake? What was the blessing in that cursing the ground for Adam's sake? Well, number one, if Yahweh don't make an alternative for Adam to be able to eat food and live in a world that's already got the curse of sin on it, then Adam and Eve would have to die. Because they can't eat no more of the fruit of the Garden of Eden. That's been put off limits to them now. They can't touch it no more. They can only touch of the fruit or the fruit that comes from a cursed ground. And that's outside the Garden of Eden. So, what do you have there? If Yahweh don't curse that ground, Adam and Eve die that very day. There's no need for them to live on, because they're going to starve to death. They're going to be driven out of the garden, and if they don't have a way of getting food somewhere outside the garden, they're going to die. So he says, for your sake, I'm going to curse the ground, and you can, and in sorrow, you can eat of it all the days of thy life. In sorrow. Well, at least it'll keep you alive as far as long as you're living. As you can go plant and you can raise food, and it'll be good tasting food, but it's not life-giving food for eternity. Well, in Genesis 3:18, thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth unto thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. Okay, and the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. And Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living. Unto Adam also, and unto his wife, did the Yahweh Elohim make coats of skin and clothe them. So this is the father now. This I thought at first it was the son. No doubt the son is the voice of Yahweh, of the father. No doubt he has been the voice of Yahweh ever since the Garden of Eden. But this is Yahweh himself. He's the one that personally created Adam and Eve up front with the help of his son, or the assistance of his son. But it was Yahweh's power that created all life. And so he had to come and confront the duo in the Garden of Eden because of their transgression against him. All right. And the Yahweh Elohim said, behold, a man has become as one of us to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand, take also the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore the Yahweh Elohim sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword, which turned every way to keep the tree of the way of the tree of life. Now let's go to Luke chapter 17. Then said he unto the disciples, it is impossible but that offenses will come, but woe unto him through whom they come. Now, it says over in James 3:2, it says, in many things we offend all, he that offends not in word the same as a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. What is that telling us? Well, if I can find James chapter 3, I might read it. Let's see, let's just read, start with verse 1. It says, my brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. So he says, my brethren, be not many masters. For in many things we offend all. Now he's talking about the masters, the prophets that are the head of the temple, the congregation. He's talking about these pastors that he has appointed to be shepherds over his sheep. For he says, my brethren, he's talking about all the brethren in the church. He says, be not many masters. In other words, don't everybody clamor to be a master in the church. Just only one. All you need is one. For in many things, we. And I see that we, that's a plural pronoun for more than one person. He said, for in many things we offend all. We that are called to be masters, we offend all. We offend all. If any man offend not in the word, though, the same as a perfect man. Now, you teach the word 100% right, and you're a perfect man. Now you're going to offend all people that are without inspiration, that doesn't desire inspiration, that are not there to learn what the real truth is. They're there for the loaves and the fishes. So those are the ones you're going to offend. Because you don't teach things that they can that are comfortable for them to in their comfort zone, that they have settled into a comfort zone, and so you're not preaching smooth things unto them, so that they can feel comfortable all the time, and so you offend all of those when you speak the point of truth. All right. So it says, for many things we offend all. Now James is talking about, James is the one that's talking here. James is an apostle, he's a leader. He said, so all of you brethren, don't be many masters. Just need one, that's all that's necessary. Because he said, we offend all. We're the biggest offenders that they are against the masters. Because most of the masters are uninspired, and they're not there for the purified truth. They're there for the loaves and fish, and that's all they came for, and that's all they want, and that's all they're going to go home with. And so those we're going to offend, and they won't be back. Unless they think you got more loaves and fishes to feed them, and then they'll come back every time for a handout. So behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth, and that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold, also the ships, which though they be so great, are all driven of fierce winds, but yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on the fire of hell. Oh my, this is what we observed as we come out at last feeding, Pastor Gilead Center, for every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of the deadly poison. Therefore bless we Yahweh, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of Yahweh. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a fig tree, or either a vine, figs? And so can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. On obtaining wisdom, who is a wise man, and indeed with knowledge? Among you, let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But that you have bitter envy and strife in your heart, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of the righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So it's sown in the peace of them that make peace. So there are those that make peace, and there are those that sow and make discord. All right, back to Luke chapter 17. So it said, then said he unto the disciples, it is impossible but that offenses will come. It says it's impossible for offenses not to come. But woe unto him through whom they come. Now, so your offenses can come from a righteous man, and it can come from an unrighteous man. Like I said in James 3, those that brought offenses, they offended all. But if they didn't offend in the word of Yahweh, teaching it wrongly, then they were judged as being perfect. But if one comes teaching false doctrine about a cardinal truth of the sanctuary, like Brothers did, well then it says, woe unto that person. Woe unto him. It was better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he cast, I'm going to put the word be, and he be cast into the sea, than that he should offend one of these little ones. It's better for him to have a millstone put around his neck and cast himself into the sea, because he's going to be lost anyway in the end, than for him to hang around and offend one of these little ones and cause him to stumble and lose his soul salvation. That's exactly what happens to all, with all false prophets. Okay? It says, take heed unto yourself. If thy brother trespass against thee, rebuke him, and if he repent, forgive him. So take heed unto yourselves. If thy brother trespass against thee, rebuke him, and if he repent, forgive him. Well, I had this man here that was a devil. He came to my property under false pretenses, and I couldn't get rid of him. And he says he was interested only in the truth and teaching the truth. But he was full of dead man's bones, and he was a liar. And I told him he'd crossed over the line, and that I was through with him, and he could never, ever again get back into my good graces. And that I had given him orders to get off my property. And he was in a dilemma. He says, where can I go? What can I do? I said, that's you, it's not me, but you're not welcome here no more. He said, well, can't you forgive me one more time? He said, we're brothers. And I said, no, we're not brothers. That's number one, we're not brothers. And yet I forgave you many times, and we're not even brethren. And yet here you come along now, want me to forgive you one more time, and I'm telling you that your time is up, because I'll forgive a brother as many times as I'm instructed to from the scriptures. But I'm not going to forgive somebody that's a usurper and a false pretender that comes here underlying pretenses. And once he's filled his cup up, then he crosses over the line with me, and there's no more mercy then for him. That's what I told him. He says, can't you get... He tried to embrace me. He tried to grab me and said, come on, please, one more time. Just give me one more chance. And I said, nope. There is no more chances for you. I have warned you time again. I said, there's a time coming when you're going to cross over that line. And when you do, there's no more forgiveness. And he just kept on trespassing day in and day out, just ignoring me, didn't think I was serious. And then one day I told him, I said, well, you've crossed over the line now. I said, now get your stuff and get out. And I said, there's no changing my mind. I will not change my mind. No matter how much you plead, no matter how much. But now if you was a brethren and showed yourself faithful, but you just happened to fall, and I said, you want forgiveness? I said, I'll forgive you as many times you can get yourself back up and repent and try to not do that again. I'll forgive you as many times as I need to. But not this time. So it says in Luke 17, verse 4, and if the trespass against these seven, and if he trespass against thee seven times in a day, and seven times in a day turn again to thee, saying, I repent, thou shalt forgive him. Well, this man turned to me many times, but he never did say, he never would acknowledge that he was wrong, and he never would repent. He always believed that he was the one in the right, but I was the one that was holding the hammer. I was the one that owned the property, and I was the one that was supplying his meat and his raiment and his shelter. I was the one paying for all that. Without me, he would be out under the stars. He says, and the apostle said unto Yahweh, increase our faith. And the Yahweh said, and the apostle said unto the Yeshua, increase our faith. And Yahshua said, if you had faith as a grain of the mustard seed, you might say unto this sycamine tree, be thou plucked up by the root, and be thou planted in the sea, and it should obey you. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he has come from the field, go and sit down to me, and will not rather say unto him, make ready, wherewith I may sup and gird thyself, and serve me till I have eaten and drunken, and afterwards thou shalt eat and drink. Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. In other words, I don't think so, or I don't believe so. No, he didn't. He surely did not. So likewise, ye, when you shall have done all those things which are commanded you, saying, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. So when I drove that man off my property that I wouldn't forgive the last time, he went out, and he's a perpetual lawbreaker. He breaks the laws of the land. Sure enough, the next thing I heard from him was he was in prison. He was in jail. And they had him in jail as a habitual criminal. He'd been in jail at between 15 and 20 times the last 15 years. And he's a habitual criminal. A lawbreaker. He don't keep any laws, man's laws of the land. He don't keep none of Yahweh's laws. Yet he claims that he's keeping all of Yahweh's laws, and he's not going to obey man's laws, but he's going to obey all of Yahweh's laws, and that's what gets him in prison. He thinks he's obeying all of Yahweh's laws. So you can understand why it wouldn't have done any good to forgive that man and take his abuse that he put upon you. Okay, it says 10 lepers healed, Luke 17, verse 11. And it came to pass as he went unto Jerusalem, that he passed through the midst of the Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him the 10 men that were lepers, which stood afar off. And they lifted up their voice and said, Master Yeshua. Now let's do it again. Yeshua, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said unto them, go show yourselves unto the priest. And it came to pass, as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back and with a loud voice glorified Yahweh, and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. Okay, now what are Samaritans? They're Gentiles. Well, as I say, they are there of the 10 tribes of Israel from the north. And Yahshua answered and said, were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? They are not found that return to give glory unto the Yahweh, save this stranger. And he said unto him, arise, go thy way. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know for sure, but I suspect that those other nine that didn't return to give him thanks, I suspect that they were vulnerable. I suspect that there's a good chance that they could fall into disrepute again and have a worse for evil come upon them. I don't know if that's true, but it may be that Yahshua healed both the just and the unjust when they asked for it. When they asked for it, he heals them all. Just because they all didn't turn around and come and thank him for it, doesn't mean that Yahweh don't hold his end of the bargain. They asked for it, he voluntarily gave it to them. Just because they were ungrateful in their hearts, nine of them, doesn't mean that Yahshua is going to take away their blessing and cause them to go back like they were. But there's a good chance that they could have, though, lost their souls in the end. I don't know. And there's a good chance that they could have somewhere down the line before they passed out of this world that they remembered that good deed that Yahshua had done for them earlier. And that they may have repented and praised him. I don't have no way of knowing. But anyway, I just suspect that they were not in those nine that didn't return and thank Yahweh and glorify Elohim. They were in a vulnerable position. They were not in a close, safe position like that one that returned and gave thanks. So it says in verse 19 of Luke 17, and he said unto him, arise, go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole. And when he was demanded of the Pharisees, when the kingdom of Elohim should come, he answered them and said, for the kingdom of Yahweh cometh not with the observation. Neither shall they say, lo here or lo there, for behold, the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. There's your secret right there. There's a secret right there. If you know Yahweh's calling, if you know his commandments, and truly how to apply them and be obedient unto them and teach them, then truly the kingdom of Yahweh has come unto you. And he said unto the disciples, the days will come when you shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you shall not see it. And they shall say unto you, see here or see there. Go not after them, nor follow them. For as the lightning that shineth out of the one part under heaven shineth unto the other part under heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his days. Okay, but the first must suffer. The first must he suffer many things and be rejected of this generation. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. Whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. If you're unwilling to disobey Yahweh's command on all things, then you're putting your life in jeopardy to the evil man that's in charge of your civil government. But if you compromise and seek to save your situation, your life, by compromising, then you will lose your eternal life. I tell you that, in that night there shall be two men in one bed. The one shall be taken and the other shall be left. Two women shall be grinding together, the one shall be taking the other left. Two men shall be in the field, the one shall be taking the other left. And they answered and said unto him, Where, Master? And he said unto them, Wheresoever the body is, thither will the eagles be gathered together. Okay, your eagles today are the kings of the air. In these last days, they represent the 144,000. Because they're going to be human eagles that are going to use the airways to accomplish their mission here in the last days. In the harvesting of the whole world. It's no longer over land, over dale, down the trail and over the veil. It's no longer in a boat going over the water, or a slow flying aircraft, but it's going to be flying saucers. These are going to be aircraft that come from heaven. Okay. And it may very well be aircrafts also that have been created here on Earth, like the flying saucer. Okay. That ends Luke chapter 17. And looks like we're rocking along with our study. We only have about 10 minutes left, actually, for our regular reading. But we're going to turn to the track number, the Brother Sanson's track, The Kingdom, the Jubilee 1998. We're on page 7. Those who do not obey Yahweh's command and refuse to support the new message, the kingdom, harvest, and judgment for the living are robbing Yahweh and are cursed with a curse and barred from the land. Remember Achan. Now, Brother Johnson believed that he had this message of the judgment for the living. In the top, it was Joshua that took the children of Israel into the land, and it is antitypical Joshua, who is commissioned to first lead the wave sheaf, the vanguard, and the 144,000 first fruits into the kingdom, in the earth, the USA. Now, in the top, it was Joshua the son of Nun, and Brother Johnson played that role in 1970, coming out of the rod period and into the Isaac Branch period. At Gilead Center there, he played that role of leading the children of Israel spiritually out of the spiritual bondage in the wilderness in the Antitype and into the spiritual kingdom in the Antitype in 1970. Now that was Joshua the son of Nun. But now Brother Johnson here 28 years later is saying that this Joshua has got to lead them into the land again. But there's another Joshua now that has taken and filling his prophetic position. That's Joshua the son of Josedek down there in Zechariah 3. So now Brother Johnson is saying, but Brother Johnson is making this switch from one Joshua to the other without telling us. Without telling anybody, he's just assuming that nobody knows it better anyway, and so he's just going to make this a smooth little switcheroo right there in the middle of the stream and nobody be none the wiser. But anyway, we know better. So it's shown in Jeremiah 23:5-6, and then into the promised land, Israel, as pointed out in Jeremiah 33:14-16. As the type reveals, the light being transmitted by the marvels of typical events is a clear manifestation that there is a type for every incident of vital interest unto the Church of Yahweh, which are the only positive proofs and clear explanations of the divine providence, as there is no type for that which is false, teachers of theories without a typical representation for their claims of the so-called Bible truth, and those who believe in them are as the blind leading the blind. The types are worked out to expose the error and reveal the truth. The honest ones will shun the evil by embracing the facts and by walking in the light. Two Shepherds Rod, page 255, paragraph 2. from the time of the terrors, the children of the wicked one, Matthew 13:38, has come to his full, then will commence the harvest, and it will bring the end of this world, Matthew 13:30-40. Taking place in the end of the world, its preface is the gathering of the people by the Elijah's message. So now Brother Johnson is referring, no doubt, to Malachi 4:5 when he's talking about the Elijah's message now. He's not talking about the Elijah John that V.T. Hollis supposedly represented. He's talking about this Elijah that's pointed out here in Malachi. The last heaven sent proclamation of the gospel, which is preached first unto the church. See, Brother Johnson says he's talking about the church of the Seventh Day Adventist proper. And all the time, this prophecy is talking about Gilead Center, just before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, Malachi 4:5. And then unto all the world during that long expected day, Tract 9, page 67, paragraph 3 by V.T. Hollis. There is no judgment for the living, nor harvest in the rod period. Well, see, this is another thing. We're in the rod period now. Matter of fact, it is the rod that the rod of his mouth, which is the same thing as that rod that Moses had, was a symbol of when he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt. It's the rod of his mouth, the authority for his government. Hence, it is self-evident that the Elijah's message is in two phases, two different periods of time, and by two different servants, as pointed out in type. Is a well-established fact made plain in V.T. Hollis' writing that he, Hollis, was the Elijah of Malachi 4:5, the antitype of John the Baptist, that was to come just before the harvest. Okay, so now here's Willis Johnson actually indicating that V.T. Hollis now is going to have to be resurrected and show up on the scene at this time. Before the judgment for the living and before the kingdom, which is in perfect harmony with the type, showing that it did not and could not restore all things, that he did not, talking about V.T. Hollis, that he did not and could not restore all things. So now here we have an Elijah that comes along, and the Bible only says this when it comes in the last days is going to restore all things. But here we got this prophet, Brother Johnson, saying V.T. Hollis, the first time he came and showed up as an Elijah John, he didn't restore all things, but now he's got to come back. And this time he restores all things. He comes back as the antitype of Elijah the Tishbite. No doubt, that's what he's saying. Okay, for this Elijah is the antitype of the Ashur, the branch of the Isaiah 11:1-10, as the type shows. Prophecy must be fulfilled. Yahweh says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh." Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of Elijah. And when he appears, men may say, "You are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way." Let me tell you how to teach your message. Testimony, Mishnah 4:75. Thus, to be in harmony with the type, we would have to look for the Elijah, who is to restore all things and to appear in the movement following V.T. Hollis and the Shepherd's Rod message, which is the fifth angel's message of Revelation 18:1-4, the harvest, the judgment for the living, and the kingdom. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him at Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgment. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, Malachi 4:4-5. That's what we have right now. It's Malachi 4:4-5 is on the scene right now. You know by now that Malachi 3:4 prophetically speaks to the people of today, and to the people just before the great and dreadful day, judgment for the living, to the people unto whom antipical Elijah the prophet is sent. And what wise counsel does Yahweh give through Malachi? He says, "Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant." Which law? The law of statutes and judgment, which the Yahweh commanded in Horeb, since this is Elohim's faithful advice unto his people of this day. We would do well to restudy this law of Moses and to remember it, for we cannot disregard his counsel and still expect his blessing. 2 TG 37, page 14. The only law of Moses, therefore, that we can possibly be admonished to remember is the third part that pertains unto us as individuals, the things that we as individuals must perform, the things that perfect our character, the things that make us a peculiar people. We therefore need to search our hearts and minds and do the things contained in the moral law of Moses, for the commandments and the statutes and the judgments, 2 TG 37, page 15, Deuteronomy 5:31. V.T. Hollis did not implement this. You're obeying all the commandments and the statutes and the judgments of the moral law of Moses, you see. Is your evidence that you have been born again, that you have been endowed with power from above, that you are enabled to choose the good and refuse the evil, that you are the children of Yahweh, keeping the commandments and the statutes in Yahweh. This is the light and shield of your life. It is the outward sign that by the life of Yahshua you have overcome the enemy of your soul and body. This system of worship, therefore, is truly the righteousness by the faith and the blood of the Yahshua that brings the righteousness of Yahshua and the people of Yahweh. Let us now, with ears wide open, hear the crier's bell. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that brings good tidings, that publishes peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publishes salvation. Thou saith unto Zion, thy Elohim reigneth. Isaiah 51:1-7. 2 TGR 37:24. This brings the first last day of this hour contest. That's at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Dusty Rose and Sandal Feet. By the Elijah David.
I've reason to believe in that man of Galilee, for he walked those dusty roads to you and me. Up in earth and comes at his burden all along, as he journeyed along to go on the Calvary. Dusty roads and the feet, oh, the journey was complete. Of the